Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Aronimink Golf Club hosts the second major of the golf season.
Scotty Scheffler wins in a runaway in the showdown at Charlotte.
This is a PGA Championship Week edition of Dirt and Sprague.
I just got off the golf course. I don't know what you want from me.
With Andy Dirt Johnson.
Play number one on this tour, chump.
And Brandon Sprague.
You smell like my stepfather.
PGA Championship Week on The Fan is brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club. There's no better course in the Northwest for year-round golf. Book your tee time at langdonfarms.com.
Oh, no, not again.
Dirt and Sprague on 105.1 FM and 1080 AM. The Fan.
Hello, good morning. Welcome back in to the second hour. Dirt and Sprague here on 105.1 The Fan. 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, and of course, YouTube. That is the Fan Sports Network. Hope everybody's Wednesday morning is off to a great start. We have a lot to talk about here in the second hour of the radio program, but we're really excited to kick off hour number two with a fantastic sports story locally here that I read about over a week ago. And I was like, dude, this is a great story.
Yes.
And so I've been working behind the scenes to try to figure this out. I knew the schedule would be crazy this week, so we're really happy to bring on a local club pro, the owner of Arrowhead Golf Course out there, earning a right to the PGA Championship, Bryce Fischer, joining us now from Pennsylvania. Good morning, Bryce. Thanks for hopping on with us. We appreciate the time. We know it's a busy week for you. I will start with what's more difficult. Is it more difficult to have to pump the gas of four cars at an Oregon City Artico when it's 50 degrees or hit a games or a match ceiling putt from like 9 feet?
That's funny. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on, fellas. It means the world. I appreciate it. It's been a fun week so far. But man, I got to be honest with you. I played with Matt Fitzpatrick yesterday, and that's a little bit tougher to hit that shot. But both fun things to do. That's awesome.
I mean, let's take it back to the qualifying abandon. Like, I'm curious. I should know this, yeah. But like, how many times is this the first time that you've made a PGA Championship? Because I'm watching that event abandon mainly because it's in our state and we love the course and we're like, hey, there's this local guy from Arrowhead. How about this? So is this the first time you've qualified? And then what's going through your head on that last round abandon as you're trying to secure that spot into the PGA Championship?
Yeah. Good question. Yeah, it was my first try. Yeah, I had not tried before in the past. When I was younger, I did the Q School stuff and kind of tried to travel around with what was then the Nationwide Tour. I'm dating myself a little bit, but yeah, it was just a moment that I'll remember forever. Being able to try it the first time, and golf is funny that way where you just got to play good at the right time. There's lots of great players out there that haven't done that. And that was the situation for me. I just played well at Bandon and the chips fell in my favor and here we are. Yeah.
When do you realize or when does it hit you that you're going to be at the PGA Championship? Like, when did that kick in?
Yeah, it was kind of crazy because I was one of the guys who didn't know for sure when I hold out on 18. Like, am I in? You know what I mean? I had my opinion at the time, but I'm like, anything can happen, right? So had a few groups behind me. So I was like, I think I'm good enough. But it was one of those where like, let's just get the ball in the hole and hopefully it goes our way. So, yeah.
I love that story. So now we're out in Aronimink. We're getting ready, which, by the way, kudos to you for doing this, because if I got the chance to play in a PGA Championship, the last thing I'm doing is local interviews. I'm like, I'm soaking everything up. So shout out to you for coming on the show today. Like, playing with Matthew Fitzpatrick yesterday, is that the coolest thing? So, like, what's the coolest, like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm here moment so far?
Yeah, I've been trying to explain this to a couple of buddies, of mine, but there's an aura or around a major championship that just is indescribable. It's something you have to experience, and I've been to them before, but I've not been like inside the ropes, obviously playing. And there's just something about it, that we've heard players talk about forever. There's just something different about a major, and I think that's the part that's amazing. But being around a golf course and playing a golf course that is just perfect, in so many ways. And I know some guys like it, don't like those types of things. But the reality is that the golf course condition and those types of things, it's just very, very high level. It's just really fun to be at.
Yeah. Bryce Fisher, our guest here, getting ready for the PGA Championship. He'll be teeing off bright and early our time. It'll be like, what, Swag? 4:45, I think, is what your tee time's going to be. 4:14, excuse me, tomorrow morning. So locally, we'll have to wake up pretty early. We're going to be up anyway, so we'll have to catch you teeing off as you perform pretty well out at Bandon, joining us live from Pennsylvania. So I'm kind of curious about the after. So you're wondering if you make it. You got a couple groups behind you. You find out you're in. You celebrate. Your family is all out there. They're supporting you, watching you. I'm curious. Yeah. Walk us through. You're a club pro. You're running Arrowhead. You're used to kind of the craziness of golf. What has life been like outside of the golf stuff of – do you have now a publicist for a week? Because I was emailing somebody. Is there, like, what is the travel situation?
Do you have an assistant with you there? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what has all of this been like from your perspective?
Yeah. I mean, I'm luckily been blessed with a lot of great people around me. And yeah, we made a shift. I have an executive assistant, Adrienne Eckerson, that she's the one behind the scenes making all this magic happen. And I have to give her the kudos because she just turned around and she just sent me a video last night. It was pretty funny, but she's like, I'm going to need a raise. This is, I didn't sign up to be the PGA Tour. It was pretty awesome. Had a good laugh. But honestly, it's people like that and my wife and my family. They just put their lives, you know, on the back burner and just tried to support me in any way I can. And of course, being with Nike and Titleist, those guys have, they are such good guys and such good dudes. The guys and gals there have just taken such good care of me, so it's been awesome.
Now, how did the Matthew Fitzpatrick practice round happen? Like, do you have a past relationship? Was it random on the range? Like, how did something like that come about?
Yeah, so the course is obviously closed to any sort of organized play because they just want us to be able to kind of go do what we want and whenever we want. So there isn't really a schedule or you're not signing up or anything like that. So I just walked up on the first tee and I wanted to go play the front nine and he and Matt Wallace were there. And so I just asked him, hey, you mind if I join you?
That's
and he
so
said,
cool.
Yeah. So it was great.
Oh
yeah.
My God.
That is so
have
cool.
You, yeah. Okay. So you maybe you haven't cause you're used to being around really good golfers most of your life, right? You play golf at Oregon State, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yep.
So you've been a club pro for a while. You've been in some tournaments. Mm-hmm. You do well at Bandon.
Yeah.
Do you have a Chris Farley moment when you actually get there, though, and you're like, there's Scottie Scheffler eating lunch? Like, do you have a aha moment for yourself?
Did you get a look at Rory's blister where you walk around taking pictures of that?
Oh, guys, yeah. It's so funny because there are moments like that where you're kind of pinching yourself like, hey, there's that, there's this, you know, all those things. But, yeah, they make it. They're the stars and the guys that we look up to, you know, on TV and doing those things. And you know, that's one of the things I've learned the most of, you know, like playing with Fitzy, that like they're not doing any Superman type of things. They're just comfortable. To them, it's like playing at Arrowhead, you know, it's like playing in the, you know, back at their home course. So they're very comfortable. And that's been my focus as far as just trying to get comfortable because the arena is so magnificent.
Yeah, well, let's get a breakdown of your game and then what you make of the course so far. It's not an every year stop, Aronimic, on the PGA Tour, but it's obviously there's been big events there over the years, and golf fans for a long time know it. So what do you make of the course and the kind of the way it sets up, and then kind of handicap your game? What are the strengths? What are the weaknesses? What are we going to try and lean on as that tee time comes tomorrow?
Yeah, good questions. Yeah, for me, it is kind of something where there's a lot of drivers kind of hitting it down there as far as you can. The rough is really thick, and so it gets your attention. Anything bigger than about a 9-iron. So on holes that are, you know, are on the shorter side, they've got a good mix of short par fours and long par fours. But those holes where you can get a 9-iron and lower and some wedges, the rough is something you can deal with. Trust me, there's some lies where it doesn't matter if you're chipping, it might not get on the green. Don't get it twisted, but. But, you know, ultimately it's the fairway is going to be a premium on some of those longer par fours. But the other part of it is the fairways are there. There's a lot of slope. And so we made some adjustments with Titleist to fly the ball a little farther and have a little less roll because you can get, you get some trouble if the ball's rolling too much. So we changed the driver a little bit to get a little less roll. And hopefully that helps us. And then, of course, staying below the hole. The greens have some spots where, you know, you're making bogey if you hit the ball in the wrong spot. So, which how it should be is how it's designed. So we just got to hit our spots and put ourselves in the right spots to make the putt.
This is Bryce Fisher getting ready for a PGA Championship teeing off tomorrow. He's a CEO at Arrowhead Golf Club and a PGA teaching professional. So he goes from club pro to I'm in a major championship. And so we're pulling for you and we're really excited about it. I got to ask, so is your brother on the bag with you? Did I read that right?
Yeah. My brother is on the bag. He's a professional golfer as well. And, you know, if nobody else I'd rather make the walk with. It's just a blessing. Cool. We you know, we've gotten along forever. We both work together. He works in the company as well and helps me, you know, run the companies. And we just. Oh. It's going to be a great.
Yeah, so if your brother is on the bag with you, I'd imagine you get away with saying some stuff with your brother next to you versus somebody being assigned or somebody you're not as familiar with, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. He reminds me. He's got a saying going this week. Well, I'm not playing in the PGA Championship, but I wouldn't eat that or I wouldn't hit that. He's been all over me, guys. It's pretty funny. We have a blast out there.
You had a video. You mentioned videos coming out. You had a video from your practice round. I thought it was really funny. I'm like, welcome to the PGA Championship, a moment where you hit into the rough, and right before you hit, you're like, remind me not to hit here tomorrow. Yeah. And I start laughing because you had to chunk it out of the rough stuff.
Oh man, yeah. Some of those lies will remind you.
Yeah,
they'll teach you quickly not to be there. No, we have a great time together out there.
That's so cool to be doing that with your brother. Now, this is one of the unique things about the PGA Championship that I think, you know, a lot of people look at it as, you know, maybe it's the fourth of the four majors, which is fine. But I think one of the cool angles is like this qualifying access that a lot of people have, and you get these fun stories. Yeah. Now, Michael Block has become the famous guy from a number of years ago, where he's getting a hole in one with Rory. I'd imagine that's not where we're setting our sights. But do we have like a goal? Do you have a thought in mind of like, man, if I could do this, I'm going to feel really good about the way that I competed and played this week?
Yeah. So we set a couple goals. I mean, the main goal is I want to be mentally sound. I want to be able to have, you know, each challenge, which every shot is a new challenge, right? Whether it's a 2-foot putt or a 320 yard drive, whatever it might be, the challenge is to be mentally sound in those moments. So I don't want to deal with any fear or nerves or any those types of things where, well, there'll be nerves, but mentally making the right decisions and keeping my head in the right place. For all those challenges, and the golf will take care of itself. So that's one of our main goals. Yeah.
That's a good way to do it. Now, do you wear one of those, like, what are they, like the heart rate bands? Do you have one of those that all the players wear, like the whoop bands or whatever?
Yeah, no, we were actually talking about that the other day. No, I don't wear one of those. But I'm not a big a fan of all the different stuff on you and all that stuff. So just trying to create it as normal as possible. So, yeah.
The reason I ask is I'm just curious, what do you think that number is of the heart rate on the opening tee shot tomorrow? Like, where do you think, what number are we reaching as they're standing over that ball?
Yeah, I think I'm going to be doing my best to keep it low, but I don't think anybody would describe it as low.
Who picks the outfit? I've always wondered the outfit part of golf, and like, you know, some guys, Tiger, obviously the standard red on Sundays, like guys and what they choose to wear. It's not an important thing for you to worry about getting into a PGA championship, but like,
look good, feel good, play good.
Also, you got to look good. So like, who's picking the outfit out here to start tomorrow? Yeah.
It's actually a great question. So it's called scripting, and I'm on a full body deal with Nike, and so Nike has scripted my my outfits for the week, and they got me all dialed in. So they got me all set up, so we're all good to go.
Okay, we like Nike, but I gotta ask: did you see any part of the outfit you're like, we'll wear that one then. We'll go with that one. Or are you happy with what we got?
No, it's all good. It's all good stuff. Yeah, no, it's all good stuff. I was afraid at the beginning, being the old 46-year-old, that they're gonna dress me like I, you know, back in the 90s. But no, they took good care of me.
Yeah. Well, man, we're really excited. I can't wait to watch. Wake up early, put on the TV, and follow the opening round. Bryce Fisher, the club pro out at Arrowhead, also the owner head at Arrowhead Golf Club, has qualified. Now he is going to be playing in the PGA Championship after his performance at Bandon. Do you have a favorite course out Bandon? We should probably get that from you. Like, what's your favorite course out at Bandon?
Yeah. Well, I'll start by saying this. Bandon Dunes, the way it played last week, is a different Bandon Dunes than I've ever played it. Mm. So I would have to say that's an important piece of it. There are some tees I'd never seen before. But it has to be the classic Bandon. There's a lot of guys are on the trail side. Mm-hmm. But I'm more of the beach piece of it. And Bandon just had the finishing holes at Bandon are you know, 15 through 18 are just remarkably. I mean, they're just remarkable. It's so good, that back nine. It's probably the best back nine that I've ever, I've ever seen. And the Sunday that I played it was, there's a couple shots that are just, they'll forever, I'll never forget.
Now, to quote your brother, I'm not playing in the PGA Championship, Bryce, but I would advise birdieing hole one to feel
get
really
off
comfortable
to a good
tomorrow,
start,
okay?
Man.
That's right.
Good stuff. Bryce Fischer, congratulations on qualifying and playing at the PGA Championship, man. A great local story. We're rooting for you, and we'll follow the journey. Thanks for making time for us. We know it's a super busy week. Good luck tomorrow, man. Hit them straight.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, there we go. Great stuff from Bryce Fischer. Local club pro.
How cool is that,
and
dude?
CEO at Arrowhead Golf Club. What a dream come true for a local guy.
I mean, a guy who clearly went through, played college golf, went through Q school, thought maybe I can make this a career.
Yep.
Doesn't always come to fruition. It's an incredibly difficult thing to do to get your tour card and get all the way through it. So you become a teaching professional, you run a golf course, and they're like, hey, wild hair up your nose. Why don't we go try and qualify for the PGA Championship? And guess what happened? You qualified for the PGA Championship. I just love the thought of the nerves of not having, you don't know anybody. The practice rounds at tournaments are usually pretty hey, I'm buddies with this guy or this guy. Hey, do you guys want to go out and play a practice round? Having the stones just Matthew Fitzpatrick's just on the first tee.
Can
I
play with you guys?
Hey, you guys mind if I go loop around for nine? Yeah, dude, come along. All right. Are you talking the entire time? Do you stay in your own bubble? Are you thinking about your game?
Why didn't you ask that?
I don't know. I should have.
When he dropped a Fitzy, I was like, oh, we're friends now, huh?
I think after nine holes, you become probably chatted up.
I get this, especially at this event, because I think the guys on the PGA Tour, when they go to other clubs or they ask to come play a club or something like that, they know how hard those PGA pros work.
Yeah, a lot of them grew up learning from them, too.
Or their parents were club pros and got them into the game. So I think there's appreciation for, especially for those 20 guys coming out there and having qualified, that it's a little, there's no wall.
There's no hoity-toity nature to it.
Well,
yeah.
I do think he is, the element I'll at least give this is, because I've poo-pooed it this week, the major, not him doing that. I was stoked. We had a local guy, and that was a fun interview. I've poo-pooed the major, and you guys have pushed back on me, and rightfully so. You're big golf guys.
Well, it's the fourth major. Nobody disagrees with that.
But what I love about it that you highlighted, that is an important part of it, is the idea of the qualifying for the major. The Masters, correct me if I'm wrong, the Masters, the only people who largely get in.
Masters is the most exclusive.
It is an
field.
Invitational.
Minus the college guys, right?
We have college guys, and then they've upped their profile of there's some, the Irish Open, the South
they've
African
started,
Open.
Sure.
There's some of those. If you win the tournament,
your
you
national
get to
opens.
It.
Yeah.
But it's super hard to get into.
Super exclusive.
It's a small field. It's
PGA
rarely...
Championship and U.S. Open fields are massive, dude. It's
Yes. There's only four of
huge
those
fields.
Big trophies, right? Now, the Wanamaker's the biggest because I think they're overcompensating.
Yes, they are.
That being said, It's a massive opportunity for guys like Bryce Fischer.
Yeah.
He said he played 20 rounds a year on average.
Yeah. Because he's teaching all the time. You don't have time to go play.
Exactly.
It's not part of the job.
He's used to hey, Bryce, need you hop out here and play in the round. Okay.
All right.
And grab it. No swinging. Just go out and play golf.
Yeah.
And you get an opportunity. And if you capitalize on that, you get this rare chance of, I asked him his favorite course at Bandon. And I've never played Bandon OG. It's the only course there I haven't played. But I would imagine Bandon hits so much different than it already does when you also qualify for the
That was
PGA
the course that you did it at. It was unique and special
it
in that regard.
It has to hit at a different level.
Yeah, dude. And he talked about now every time I go play Bandon, I'm going to remember shots on 15 through 18.
Yes.
This is where I hit from when I made birdie on 16 that helps secure my pathway to the PGA Championship.
Well, the other thing in the PGA Championship, addition to the trophy and a ginormous winner's paycheck, the winner, because it's the PGA putting it on, you get a 5-year exemption to the PGA Tour for the winner.
So if he had the dream of dreams happen, he's on the tour.
So
if he would have won the event,
if he would have won the event,
that is a 5-year exemption.
Because
when
awesome.
You win a regular tournament, it's a 2-year exemption.
Yeah.
And you're into all of the other majors for a couple of years and all that stuff.
I mean, I don't think you go there mentally if you're Bryce Fisher, but what, you know, what
he's
the hell,
with
dude?
House money,
what
dude.
The hell, dude? You're just happy to be there. If you make the cut, it's an incredible story. You get to play 4 days at a pristine event or
that course.
That course
looks
dialed. Yeah,
it's dialed in. It's not super long comparative to other courses. It's a par 70, so there's only two par fives.
Yeah.
I just read there's a lot of bunkers off the fairways from other holes, so you kind of have to try to keep it as unfairway as you possibly can, not to mention what the rough ends up being.
The rough, I've heard, is pretty thick.
Yeah. Their greens are known for being diabolical and fast, and he'd mentioned not being above the hole.
They're very fast, too.
Big greens.
Big green
complexes.
It's
tricky spot. Yeah. So it's going to be fun, man. The fact that he's playing local guy, those are the cool stories that you watch for, and if he can make some noise and make a birdie, cool.
They put the club pros in with the PGA Tour guys. It's not like,
just here's
okay,
you guys.
Here's
and
the
us.
First three with all club pros in the last three. Because Michael Block's playing with.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure he'll be in a premier.
He's in a premier tee time.
No, it's going to be good stuff. 4:14 a.m. our time. Bryce Fisher, our local club pro, making the PGA Championship. And he'll tee it off tomorrow morning. Good stuff from Bryce Fisher. All right, let's roll on with hour number two. A lot to discuss. Dirt and Sprague back with more on 105.1 The Fan Sports Network.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine, in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, good stuff there from Bryce Fisher. If you missed that interview, you can catch it at 1051thefan.com. Pulling for him at the PGA Championship. We still have college football to get into. I want to talk a little NFL here, but before we pivot on, I want to remind you, speaking of golf, that on June 23rd, Toyota presents the Fan Golf Classic out at Langdon Farms Golf Club. Maybe we can get Bryce Fisher to make an appearance out
there.
There
you go. Celebrity opening tee shot from Bryce Fisher.
Badass, man.
Come on.
Afternoon round is sold out, so all we have is just a couple foursomes left for the morning round. It's the most fun day in golf. We'll be hanging out the infamous Angels Envy Bourbon Par 3 sixth hole. We'll all be eating Matt's barbecue. Maybe that's how we do it. We get Bryce and we say, we got Matt's barbecue, and he's like, I'm in.
That'll get him out there.
Head to 1051thefan.com and click on the Fan Golf Classic logo for info to sign up today. Fan Golf Classic presented by Toyota is also brought to you by Vulcan Design and Construction, Henderson & Daughter Windows and Doors, George McCoy, Warren Allen, Attorneys at Law, Battery Exchange, Maestro, Dobell Tequila, your neighborhood restaurant group, Philbrook Law, 1-800-DIVORCE, Roto-Rooter, Illegal Mezcal, and Window Nation. I noticed that somebody, who writes this script out, Swag? Is it Dusty?
That would be a brand man.
Usually Dusty.
Move.
He wrote your neighborhood.
Bro.
We got a bro in here. I like that.
Are they your neighborhood?
They are your neighborhood.
They'll be your bro for dinner time if you need them to.
We got to post a neighborhood restaurant group poll question of the day.
We got to cook one up. We got a little bit of time left, but nothing has come organically yet, so we'll wait and see how it plays out.
We'll pivot from golf to football because that's the kind of show we are.
Yes, it is.
Because we care about the American working man.
Callahan Auto Parts.
No, Zielinski.
Zielinski, that's right. It's Zielinski. That's right.
God, I love that movie.
I haven't seen it in too long.
It's been one of those,
I need to rewatch Tommy Boy.
So let's just start. We'll run down. The NFL is releasing their schedule. They're doing this big buildup so they could just basically do all their TV content with it. So they roll it out one by one by one.
Game by game by game by game by game by game.
We have the international games.
What? La-la-la-la. Drip, drip, drip.
Here we go. Let's start week one. The San Francisco 49ers.
No way. Are they playing in Australia?
At the LA Rams.
Are you sure about that?
But at Melbourne Cricket Grounds.
So the Niners lose a home game.
I think it's the Rams.
But the Niners lose a home game.
Oh, touche.
See what I did there?
Did I win our argument from years ago about the Niners having more fans than the Rams?
Did we have an argument about that?
You don't remember arguing about that?
I don't remember arguing about that, no. In LA? Did we argue about that? Yeah. I said the Rams have more fans in L.A. than the Niners do?
Yeah, and I was like, dude, the Rams are gone forever. Fans there, like, whatever, on the L.A. sports scene. Mm. Anyways, Melbourne, Australia, 5:30 p.m. kick, week one.
Yes.
Your week three international game, September 27th.
Come on down.
Ravens, Cowboys in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil.
Ah, the Brazil game. Do they got to worry about what colors they wear around the stadium because of gang activity again this year? Or is
Luckily,
there's no green involved?
There's no green involved.
They're okay. Is the field going to hold up or are players going to get injured all over the place? Because the NFL cares about player safety.
If Lamar tears his ACL on the turf monster, I'm going to lose my ass.
Yeah, me too. I think it's ridiculous how many games there are. But that it's interesting because both games so far, good games. Like we could joke about my feelings on the Cowboys next year, and I'm probably drinking the Kool-Aid too much, and I'm taking the ESPN bait. Niners and Rams is a good game. Rams were a play away from the win in the NFC last
week
year.
Week three, Ravens-Cowboys.
Neither team is out of it by then. You hope Lamar's still healthy at that point.
As long as everybody's healthy.
That's a really good game, and unfortunately, it's in Brazil.
Now, that says kickoff time is 1:25 p.m. our time.
Oh.
So they're going to fold it right in.
What day
in.
Of the week is it?
Must be a Sunday.
Is it a Sunday, or are they playing a weeknight game?
I thought the Brazil game was always a standalone primetime. They
used to do it as it was the Friday, so they would open the season
Friday
Thursday.
Game, but for whatever the calendar, they can't do a Friday game
this
opening weekend.
Well, when you have
80 weekend.
International games, you have to, I guess, get weird with it. So it's a 4:25 p.m. Eastern start time, 5:20 Rio time. So it'll be a 1:25 p.m. week three game, Baltimore-Dallas in Rio. October 4th, week four, the Indianapolis Colts take on the Washington Commies.
Not a terrible game.
In Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Yeah, they've always gone there. That's not terrible. I mean, we don't know what the Daniel Jones situation will be for the Colts and, you know, when's he going to be healthy and how all that is going to look.
I'd be worried about this game because that might be a relegated stadium at this point.
Does the team, should we relegate the loser of the game?
They got a crucial draw against Leeds.
They did get a crucial draw against Leeds. Let's not talk soccer, though. That one's in London. That's the 6:30 a.m. our time game.
Yeah, those are the early Sunday
those are
ones.
Usually end up on the NFL Network.
These are what the rest of them are basically going to be. Week five, you've got the Eagles-Jags, again, at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, 6:30 kick time.
It's a good – I mean, the Eagles, I know how I feel about Jalen Hurts. They're a playoff team and a contender. It feels like every year despite of that, and the Jags had a really good season last year and were a play away from knocking Buffalo out in the wild card round at home in the playoffs as a division winner last year. So that's another juicy matchup.
At this point, the fact that the Jags are not – the universal fan base team in London.
They should play half of their home games in Europe every year.
Well, it feels like they kind of already do. My point is they've been the leader of all the teams.
Yeah, because nobody cares about them.
Well, the report came out that he secretly wants to move them to London, but that's not going to be allowed.
Well, no, and they're playing two games there this year because
back-to-back.
Aren't they playing in the Citrus Bowl in Orlando because their new stadium's being
renovated?
Whatever. Yeah.
Week six, so back-to-back for the Jags. They'll just stay over there. And they'll play the Houston Texans, who come into Wembley Stadium.
Wembley.
And so the Jags will have back-to-back London games.
Just leave them over there, dude.
I mean, they were a good team last year.
I'm not saying they're a bad team. I'm just leave them over there. The atmospheres at their games in Europe are better than the ones in Jacksonville.
Strong disagreement.
Strong disagreement.
Look,
Jacksonville, they got a pool in their stadium. Nobody cares about them. That market sucks for the NFL. Their jerseys are ugly. Just leave them over there. I don't want European teams.
Nobody cares about them over there?
I would prefer to move them to another American city. I'd be in favor of that, but the NFL is not going to do that. Mm. Just leave them in Europe.
How could you do that to
Duval
County? You couldn't do that to Duval County.
I could do that to Duval County.
Week 7, October 25th. Steelers, Saints.
Yeah, okay, that sucks.
Stade de France.
No offense, Harley. That game blows.
That is the worst game.
Is that
so
one
far.
Of the early Sunday morning games? Is
yes.
it
yes.
I will
See,
not
that's
be watching.
A 6:30 a.m.
All 6:30s these games.
Yes.
If I'm up by the time the fourth quarter starts, I'll turn it on. There will be zero sense of urgency to wake up and watch that game.
So note this, okay?
Yes.
I want you to comp
yes.
this.
File it away.
NFL have, stuck it to the Frenchies.
We have Steelers and Saints week 7, 6:30 our time in Paris, okay? Week 9, so bear in mind the time of the year. This is November
8th. Juicy season. We're in, yeah.
Well, you'll get why I'm asking, why I'm telling you the time frame here. Bengals-Falcons in Madrid. Who's starting for Cincinnati at that point?
Who's starting for Atlanta at that point? I got by a Michael Penix picture the other day. I'm glad I didn't retweet it, but I saw it. I don't know why I don't ever remember seeing him without it. He always wears a do-rag everywhere he goes, I feel like, in public. And he got engaged or married. I can't remember which of the two it is.
I think he got married.
Was it married? Yeah. And there were pictures and somebody photoshopped his hairline all the way to like the back of his head. So he had hair on the side and then it just basically cut off in the back, like back to middle part of his head.
That's not what his hairline is.
And I Googled it because I'm like, I don't want to get butt cracked here because that's hilarious if that's his hairline. Shout out to the baldies out there.
Yeah.
Now I know why he wears a do-rag everywhere. And from the pictures I saw online, that's not his actual hairline.
Okay.
But well, I was very disappointed by that.
Bengals Falcons could be worse than Steelers Saints at that point.
Very well could. I know Cincinnati made a move on the defensive line, but you know, they're still the Bengals.
Week 10. Patriots Lions in Munich, Germany.
Not going to be a good game because the Pats are going to suck this year.
Their
coach
is
sleeping around with reporters. They're not going to have the easiest schedule in the world. They got to play teams with a pulse. They're not going to the playoffs this year.
I don't know if that was plural, by the way. I think it was just Rossini, who, by the way, is not getting divorced. She's kissing her husband on Mother's Day.
Yeah, or was that a PR plant of like, let's get the sharks to stop circling?
I don't think that's going to stop them from circling. If they find more information and videos, they're going to put them out.
They will.
It's a hot topic right now.
It is.
Patriots-Lions. That's a good game, dude. 6:30 a.m. kick.
Unless the Pats end up sucking next year.
And then your final one is November 22nd, week 11, Vikings-Niners. This is the Niner home game. They're losing at Estadio Banorte, Mexico City, Mexico.
But at least it will still be a home game for them.
It will be, yeah. Because Mexico City loves the Niners.
Mexico City loves the Niners, so they'll get two pseudo home. Well, the Australia game might not be a home game.
This Sunday night game.
Yeah, that one's easier because the time difference isn't the same, so you can play it in a normal schedule and throw it somewhere in this. I mean, all of them outside of one or two are really competitive and compelling matchups. That's the worst part about all of this. Europe deserves our crap. Europe deserves the worst teams, the worst games, the games that nobody wants to watch. The Thursday night Saints-Falcons game where they're wearing mustard yellow jerseys, that's the games that we should be sending to Europe. The fact that there are this many Super Bowl contenders going overseas to playing games and this many passionate cities losing home games, they're never going to stop because all they care about is the almighty dollar and enough is never enough for the NFL. It just sucks that there's good matchups that could be in good atmospheres that are going over to play internationally at 6:30 in the morning on a Sunday. That sucks.
Would you care to see the...
We should treat this like Hard Knocks, dude, like the Titans, the Saints, like go down the list of the Raiders, send them over. All of them. You go play your international games. Anybody else, you don't have to go.
The Niners will have the most miles traveled this year. They'll travel 38,000 total miles for their games. It's number one in the NFL.
Australia does not help their case.
The Rams are number two at 34,000.
Ditto.
Texans at 28, Cowboys at 27, Pats, Dolphins, Chargers, Jags, Eagles, and the Seahawks have the 10th most miles traveled this year. Would you care to guess who has the least amount of miles traveled in the National Football League?
I would be willing to guess. It has to be a team in the Northeast, I would imagine.
You are incorrect.
Incorrect. It's not a Northeast team, huh?
Nope.
Because there's so many that are close
there's
by.
There's not a Northeast team in the bottom four.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got to be a team, I'd imagine, that's not playing an international game.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Just throw one out.
I'll throw out the give me the Green Bay Packers.
You're close. They're 28th. The Panthers only travel 8,740 miles.
Tampa, New Orleans, and Atlanta, all pretty close.
The Browns travel 9,000. The Bears only have to travel 10. So talk about sneaky little things there for a contender.
That matters, man.
And then the Bucks traveling 12,000. Those are your bottom four traveling teams.
Yeah, the West Coast teams will always have a longer travel just to begin with because of the lack of concentration of teams. And then if you add in an international game, it's just gonna pile up on you. Send the Panthers to England, too.
So there's a little NFL for you. The international games are announced. There's the full docket of international games this season. We have a lot more to get into. We got a Statter Story Wednesday, Dirt and Sprague. We're back with more on Portland Sports Leader 105.1, The Fan.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back in. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope your commutes are going all right. I know it's a little wet out there.
Yeah, we needed it.
We needed it. We needed it.
We'll suppress our fires this summer.
That'll help.
A little bit of rain in May, man. Goes a long ways.
We have a lot to get to in the third hour of the program, and then in the fourth hour, we got a little Statter Story hump day for you. I'm excited for my Statter Story number.
Ooh, you like it today?
I do like it.
Okay.
And we'll get to that in hour number four. Daryl Morey fired by the Sixers.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, six seasons, and he has let go. Bob Myers is going to fill in, if not replace him outright. He's a big part of the Harris ownership group. He's been partners with them, and so he came on. He signed on with the Sixers organization to kind of, like, oversee it.
Yeah.
And they've concluded after no conference finals appearances, a couple semis, no playoffs, and disappointment that Daryl Morey, bye-bye, see you later. They're going to keep Nick Nurse.
Nick Nurse sticks around.
I always,
GM goes.
I don't know how to feel about this. Unless I had like what I thought was a clear game-changing coach. Like if I had Sean McVay and they moved on at the in the GM spot, I'd go, yeah, I get it.
I get it. If the Niners do it, if Lynch, just you know, their draft class doesn't pan out this year and they're like,
sure,
dude, we need a different GM, but you're not firing Kyle Shanahan.
If you think your coach for any team is really good, I get it. And I'm not saying Nick Nurse isn't good.
No.
I just always largely lean with it's odd to fire only the GM and then keep the coach. I always find that odd because the GM wants to hire their coach. They have a vision. They have an idea. And maybe Nick Nurse will move on, and this will just be no big deal because it's all about roster construction. But Daryl Morey shown the door in Philadelphia.
I chuckle about when this happens because it's funny to think about expectations for different franchises. And I pulled some audio from the trade deadline we can get to in a moment. But they've been a consistent playoff team. Now, they haven't gotten over the hump. You can argue the Paul George thing has not worked out. It also isn't really Daryl Morey's fault that he tested positive for steroids and had to get suspended for 25 games. And also,
that helped him, actually.
It probably did. It also is funny to think about. He has hit two, I would argue, absolute home runs on backcourt draft picks. Maxey was the 21st pick in the draft, has turned into one of the best young guards in the NBA.
No doubt about it.
And arguably a guy that they can build their franchise around once the Embiid contract is finally untangled.
Yeah.
And Edgecombe had a – he's not going to get the attention of some of the – he had a phenomenal rookie season this
year.
Yes,
he did.
And had some great moments in the playoffs. And, like, he's two for two in drafting those guys. Now, I know it's more in-depth than that and it takes more than that, but it's just funny to think about a team who's in the playoffs every year in the East, hit both of their draft picks in the backcourt, and they fire their general manager because they couldn't live up to expectations, and we just extend our guys despite flopping on like three or the four draft picks that they've had in the first round over the last 4 years. So the expectation thing is funny. It also, like this, the writing was on the wall the second they lost, because then you get the anonymous, well, you know, Joel Embiid and other players are very upset that moves were made at the deadline and they traded away McCann and they thought it was a move just to stay under the luxury tax and not to pay a bill, and he's been really good for OKC. And so once you get those murmurs that come out immediately after the season, you're like, man, there's a little bit of smoke here, and it didn't take him long to fire
him. I totally agree with your take on Edge. Like, Edge comes top five pick, and the lottery luck fell their way, and they capitalized.
Yes, the Maxey one, he was the 21st pick in the draft, dude.
That's an uber impressive pick, and I give you that. I just, my counter to this stuff is he didn't get fired because he made good picks. He got fired because he gave Paul George a four-year, $200 million deal. He got fired because they extended Joel Embiid, and that is an untradeable contract.
One of the worst in the league.
For a guy who might play 35 games in a year if you're lucky and you hope some of those are playoffs.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Jared McCain trade, and I couldn't believe this when I saw it announced. But so Jared McCain had a really good start to his rookie year. He then gets hurt. He's out. He comes back, and it's they have Maxey now. Well, okay, so that kind of leaves Jared McCain a little bit out on an island. And Philadelphia concluded, Maxey is better than McCain. We're going to kind of lean more that way.
We got Edgecombe now. We're going to move on from it.
We don't need another small backcourt guy. And Jared McCain was traded to the Thunder for a couple second-round draft picks, essentially.
That is it.
Guess who's popped up in the playoffs having some pretty good performances? Oh, that's right. Jared McCain was a really good basketball player, and you just gave him to the Thunder.
Yeah, he's been really good.
Here was Daryl Morey reacting to the chatter of Jared McCain being traded to the Thunder.
Jared, now, if you didn't already have something lined up, like nothing materialized, you said, because I think the argument that such good value, given that he's shooting 38.5% from the field this year, it's hard to argue that you're selling high on it. So there was no real downside risk of you can make that trade at the draft, or you can make that trade at a later date if it's just about the return. So why make the move now if nothing else has materialized?
No, I appreciate that perspective. I'm quite confident we were selling high. Yeah. Obviously, time will tell.
But the only other high point, and we weren't looking to sell, I'll be frank. Like, teams came to us with aggressive offers for him, and you could say, yeah, that's because he's a good player. I agree with that. We thought this return was above, you know, for the future value for our franchise, what we could get. So the only higher point would have been during his run last season. But otherwise, we feel like we did time this well.
I'll say this about Daryl Morey. If we hired him in Portland, I think people would actually get excited. And then my counter is, as somebody who's been a little bit of a skeptic on Daryl Morey, acknowledging Daryl Morey's had pretty good success wherever he's landed.
They've won. They just haven't won at the highest level.
It's hard to do that.
Yeah.
But my age-old thing that I will say forever is I love how quickly people want to criticize LeBron and say, oh, look at Jim LeBron making all these changes. Yeah, and he got four titles out of it. Daryl Morey hasn't gotten one, and the media slurps it up. So
he's,
like,
never been to a title.
I like Daryl Morey. I think he's really smart. I think he's pretty transparent, too. Like, he'll come out, and he'll just have interviews, and I think that's part of the reason the media gives him a pass is he talks to him.
Yeah. Transparency definitely helps.
The one thing he does that I've always been a little like, dude, stop. He tweaks way too much.
Yeah.
He doesn't.
He's got too much Bob Whitsitt in him.
He's got a lot of Trader Bob. And I like elements of what Trader Bob said in the doc of, like, you can't just sit pat, but sometimes you need to. I use the two teams we're talking about a lot now in the playoffs as an example of this. What was the big conversation last year for the Spurs in the summer?
Giannis.
They should trade for Giannis. Trade now. Get rid of this guy, that guy, and the other guy, and get Giannis. Giannis and Wemby, could you imagine? What was it with the Thunder 2 years ago? Go make a big swing, man. Go big. You got to win the title.
Got all these assets.
Like, I think what we're learning is, one, you need cheap, affordable contracts to navigate the salary cap, second apron stuff.
Yeah.
And two, like, we all on this show, and people largely our age, if not older, we grew up in eras where we didn't just quit on a team after two seasons. We got used to guys playing together, and it would, you know, look, some runs would not end with titles, but you'd see the Indiana Pacers run it back with Reggie Miller and
competitive every year,
Rick Smits and Mark Jackson, and, yep, and you know what I mean, and they'd add Jalen Rose to the fold every once in a while, Austin Crozier, but like, we watched guys run it back and play and build chemistry and continuity. He largely, in my opinion, doesn't do that, and that's the one criticism of him, I would say. Outside of the media, largely always giving him a pass on his team's coming up short, but also praising him as the most analytical, smart, forward-thinking general manager in the league.
Yeah, the tough part with the McCain trade, too, is that you just don't know what the directive was there, because a lot of the intel out of Philadelphia says that was a trade dictated by ownership to say, we're not going anywhere. Our highest paid, or one of our highest paid players, is suspended for PEDs. The other one is not available to play.
To me, it's the
George. So let's get under the luxury tax and get rid of one of these contracts. And that's the unique part about all of these moves and dealings that happen. We just don't know what the direction is from behind the scenes, because ultimately general managers have bosses. Bosses who write checks.
You gotta respond to them.
If they say, hey, get under the luxury tax, we're not going anywhere, then you say, okay, I got to go. And it ages terribly for the general manager, because to your point, he's been great in OKC and the numbers have improved across the board. It helps to play with more talent around you and nobody's paying attention to him. But that's the funny part about criticizing GM moves sometimes.
To that, I'd say, and finally, as we get to the third hour, you're not wrong, but also you don't sign Paul George to a four-year, $200 million deal.
Yeah.
Everybody in the league was like, what?
Yeah.
That was
aged terribly.
It's aged really terribly.
Yeah. The Embiid one, I'll defend a little bit, just for the regard of, like, he's
the franchise guy.
Like, that's hard. Like, that's so much easier on the outside looking in to say. Like, that's like me arguing we should have traded Dame 2 years earlier.
I'll absorb
him. No franchise is going to do that, but you could have got much more value for it if you did.
I absorb what you're talking about, but
the Paul George one's fine.
Egregious. Yeah. Loaded third hour and fourth hour of the radio program, Dirt and Sprague. We're back with hour number three on 105.1 The Fan Sports Network.
You know, over the years, I've seen it all. So now, I'm sharing it all. Join me for Unfiltered Talks with the names you love on my new podcast, On Par with Maury Povich. Follow and listen to On Par wherever you get your podcasts.